with another panel sponsored by InfoSistema.com, an organization that first brings to you all, for your computer, information as objective as we can, and hopefully it serves the purpose of the participation and youth involved in school district. Today, we have three guests that will be talking about the topic about budgeting. What is budget? How that works in the entire key growth, complex abilities, and variables together and make it simple so we can understand. I will ask our panelists to introduce themselves and then start us with some statements that we will talk for a little while before we open the floor to our colleagues.
Hi, I'm Carol Carstensen, president of the Madison School Board. And without any direction, I decided I would do my quick and dirty. This is what the state system of financing public education is like. I think that if you don't understand what the state sets up, you can't understand what's happening at the local level. And basically, school districts used to be independent taxing authorities up to the point in 1993 when the state legislature took certain kinds of control over finances. At that time, they committed to three separate acts. Two of them have been enacted and one that didn't occur until 1995-96. The first was to establish revenue caps. And essentially what that means is that all school districts had their budgets frozen wherever they were in 93. And then districts were allowed to increase their budgets by only a small amount per pupil thereafter. The first time it was about $190 per pupil. This year it was $248 per pupil. And if you add students, you get to add per pupil amount. If you lose students, you subtract the per pupil amount for that student. And it's actually worked on a three-year rolling average. The second thing the state did was a law which is called the QEO, or Qualified Economic Offer. And that modified the state's mediation arbitration law for teachers, just for teachers, said that any school district that offers teachers a salary and benefits package that is at least 3.8% can avoid going to arbitration. Because of the way that's written and because of the way in which mediation arbitration laws work otherwise, it meant that districts had to really start bargaining at 3.8, because anything below would send them through they would end up in arbitration, and arbitrators look at what are called comparable districts, and everybody else would be paying more than 3.8, and you'd end up paying more. The third piece, and this is often described as a three-legged stool, third leg of the stool was two-thirds funding. That came in 1995 to 1997 budget. And basically what that meant was the state committed to providing two-thirds of the local costs through state funding. However, the money is distributed based on property wealth for students, so that poorer districts get a higher rate of support from the state than wealthy districts do. Madison is a relatively wealthy district based on property value per student. So we get about 22 or 23% of our costs reimbursed by the state. There are some districts that get 85% of their costs. So those three pieces, the revenue caps, the QEO, and two-thirds funding, are the basis for state financing. Now you'll notice if our budget can only go up a small amount per pupil, and it works out to be about a 2.5% increase in our overall budget, but our staff costs go up 3.8%, there's a gap. And it's a gap that occurs every year. And that has led to the need to cut our budget every year from 1993 to the present. In other words, we have to reduce our expenditures to comply with the revenue cap. So if there are things that we used to do that we can no longer do. The other piece that is important to understand is that when the state put in place this whole array of laws, they also froze the amount of money the state was providing for categorical aid. And that categorical aid is the funding for things such as special education, for ESL bilingual services, for transportation, and for a number of other specified services that schools are required to provide. In 1993, at the time this all occurred, special ed, which is the biggest portion of categorical aid, the state was providing a 45% reimbursement on local costs. Because the amount was frozen, with just a tiny bit of an increase in 1999, the state's reimbursement rate is now below 28%. So an increasing proportion of the cost of special ed, bilingual education, transportation has been shifted to the local school district. And that portion has to come out from the finances under the revenue cap. Any state aid we get in the way of categorical aid is over and above revenue caps, as is federal aid. And any kind of grants or other money-making process. If the state had really committed to maintaining its fair share of special education, we would not have faced any of the financial problems we face. My estimate is that right now they were reimbursing us at about 45%. We would have $12 million more than we currently have to spend. And that more than covers our gap. So that in a nutshell. I actually have a small paper that I put together that describes that. Those are a lot of numbers. Actually, Don is seeing this. This is a divide.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Again, as I spoke with you in terms of finances and trying to help us to make some sense of the budget. Peter,
schools, so we did have more challenges in that respect. does talk to most people, it's such a dull topic, such a dry topic. I mean, budgets, what do budgets imply? They imply restraint. It's all about what you have to, you know, spend, but you have to keep yourself within your budget, and how dry it is. But of course, it has such a huge impact on the running of this school district, especially because of the situation that Carol was just describing in this rather diabolical arrangement that we have here in the state of Wisconsin, where you, by decree, have more money coming in than is coming in. And that may have made sense for about 5 or 10 years if the sentiment was that there was perhaps overspending, that there wasn't enough control being put on school budgets. But I would think after about 10 years or so, that has outlived its usefulness. And now it's becoming more and more difficult, you know, for every school district in this state. When I think of budgets, I guess I have a somewhat different perspective, and perhaps because I'm an economist, because I do forecasting. And I rarely look at just 1 year. I'm always thinking in terms of 3 years, 5 years, or longer. And my experience has been, and for individuals as well as for any organization, that the more difficult your situation might be, the more it makes sense to look at that longer picture, the more imperative it is, so that you have a sense of where you're going. About a month ago in this room, Mark and I was presenting a forecast that we put together, the district put together with the help of PMA, of how it might look over the next 5 years. I think rightly emphasized that it's just a rough guess. And it showed next year an $8 million budget gap if we were to continue the current operation going forward over the next 5 years, and we didn't do any kind of budget cuts, that next year we would have an $8 million budget gap. The following year it would be $17 million. Then it would be $22 million. Then $29 million. And finally, $38 million by the year 2011. And of course, that's just through 2011. Imagine what it would look like by 2016. And I think those kind of numbers just sort of leave the head reading. Like, a couple of months ago, there was an exercise, a $100 budget exercise, where this $300 million budget was put into the form of $100. And the public was invited to try to find $3.77, $3.85 out of that $100 budget. And at least before I read the newspaper, the thing that jumped out at me was that no group was able to come up with $3.85. And if you go out 5 years, we're not talking $3.85, we're talking $10 to $15 or more. And to my mind, how do you get your arms around that? And that's what I kind of thought about. And in thinking about it, to my mind, perhaps the way you do it, as a suggestion, is that you see that you get a group together, a task force, committee, whatever you may call it, and a very, very well-designed group to look at how might we be able to come up with the equivalent of $30 to $40 million in cuts by 5 years from now. What might the district look like? And to do something like that, it's really not about cutting. It's really starting with one piece of paper. And what do we want this district to look like to be able to operate with $290 million, $280 million instead of the $320 million that we have? And of course, there's still a plenty of numbers to get that laid out right. And it doesn't have to be 5 years. Maybe it's $20 million over 3 years. I mean, but to have a group that, as it's going, tries to come up with these really massive figures, proposal, ultimately what I have in mind is to, in effect, prove to the voters that we've done everything we can to really conserve our spending. And that, okay, now it's your turn to step up. And I believe firmly that I'm not someone, I just had a regular dinner this evening, I'm not a dreaming idea. I believe very firmly that if you go through an exercise like that, and you've laid out to people how it all works, and made it clear just how difficult it is, and you've had taxpayers, you've had school finance experts, you've had people from the district, from the board, teachers, parents, everybody involved in this collective effort, that at the end of the day, you bring in the community, and they see what you've done, and going forward, they support you. And referendum don't pass 51-49. You don't want referendums to pass 51-49. You want them to pass 61-39. And I think you could do that by doing something like that.
So what I'm hearing here is similar to what we saw with the federal plan, trying to understand the complexities of the budget. You prepare yourself as a parent, and someone who's very interested in school student medicine, and as a citizen, also bringing your expertise. And as you bring your expertise, one of the things that I was hearing from you, besides the strategy in the people, was similar to what Carol said. If we don't pay attention to the budget, we're going to start coming back to the same problem year after year and look at twice.
Well, if you don't just come back to it, and it does get worse. See, that's the thing. It's not like, well, you're cutting millions here and that's it. And that's what's so bad wrong with the fact that it is laying out the way it is. And I think, you know, a lot of people are hopeful that perhaps over the next several years the state will address this structural budget gap. And, you know, they say the economists tend to be pessimistic. And so I'm going to be the economist here, and I'm going to be pessimistic. For three reasons. And it's not to say that I think there will be a change, but I'm not, I wouldn't put all my eggs in that basket for three reasons. First of all, this is a politically divided state. And after all, the last election, no state in the country came close to when it came to deciding who was going to be our president. And that, I think, is a reflection of the division politically in the state. And when you have a politically divided state, it's more difficult to do truly ambitious changes in government. So that although everybody agrees that something needs to be done, you know, there's only tentative efforts so far been made to change it. Secondly, you cannot lose sight of that whole kind of context of what's going on in the nation. You know, we are in the effects of the Bush-Greenspan tax cuts are going to be with us for many years. And part of those, of the impact of that, is it puts ever more pressure on the state and local level to fund and provide services. And if tax increases are made, which I think they will be at the federal level, it becomes even more difficult. I mean, when we're talking about changing the way things are, well, if you want to get more money into the schools, well, how do you do that unless you increase taxes? There's a lot of pressure to make that very difficult. But then the final reason, and this is the one that I think is, that really does affect us here in Madison most, is that when, and I think it is when, change is implemented, I think that the focus of that change will be more on those districts that are below the state average in terms of the funding that they receive from the state. And we, of course, are about 15% above the average. So that perhaps we will see some improvement in our situation, but I don't think it will take care of, I would not plan on taking care of it completely. I think it would be realistic to say that perhaps it might be down the merit, but I would be surprised, I truly would be surprised if it was completely closed. Because to do that implies an incredibly expensive change that I'm not sure the state is yet ready to undertake.
I think you're saying quite a few things here that we need to discuss before we get into an invite Dan to come and introduce himself and what's his point of view for tonight.
Thank you. I'm Don Severson, like all of you, a taxpayer. I represent a group called Active Citizens for Education, who are very vitally interested in quality and effective education at effective and efficient prices or costs to the taxpayers. Carol very succinctly pointed out the state funding picture. And while we can't do anything about that as a district, except provide our input to decision makers at the state level in that political and legislative process, what we can do, however, as a district, as a board of education, is effectively and responsibly deal with how we can use the funds we do have. The taxpayers and others with whom I talk and listen to and so forth have really no problems with paying taxes for education. What they're increasingly becoming aware of and concerned about is how effectively are the funds that we are paying now used. And particularly with relationship to performance and results. The questions being asked a lot are, you know, are we getting the best bang for the buck, I guess, to put it in the vernacular, but are we getting student achievement and performance, teacher performance, administrative performance, to the highest degree possible for the dollars that we are spending? So I don't really hear taxpayers talking about cutting taxes for the schools as much as what I'm saying I hear how can we use it better. So that suggests, I think, an importance to looking at systemic ways to prepare budgets, to spend the money. And it's very easy to get into, you know, more of the cosmetic kinds of things, the cutting approaches. And Peter, you gave me what I would call a nice segue into this, and that is looking at a different approach of allocating funds rather than cutting funds. The cutting process seems to create lightning rods and competitions among interest groups in their part of the budget, which doesn't tend to be very positive and very constructive to a great degree. And so in order to really systemically look at how the district operates and how it invests its money. And I'd rather use the term invest than spend. But that's our mentality, you know, is to spend. But really we're having to make an investment in education and in the pupils and in the staff and in the community. So in that way, it's, I think, more appropriate for the Board of Education in particular, to exercise its responsibility, which is called a fiduciary responsibility. State law requires the Board of Education to provide that fiduciary responsibility and accountability. And basically, what that expects is a base of trust, confidence, and openness in the processes and in the operations. And it seems to us, generally as taxpayers, that an effective way to build that confidence, trust, and openness is to do an ongoing, effective evaluation and assessment of the programs and services that are provided to determine, you know, what are the programs, what's the investment made in those programs, what is the cost, and then what results and benefits do we get as a result of that investment. So that I think this feeds into Peter. Check me if I need to alter my perception. But what this can do is put you on a basis of evaluating. Okay, what are the values of the district? What kind of outcomes do we want? And how are our programs and services fit with that vision, that mission, those expectations of performance and results, and are those programs and services therefore cost effective? Another way of putting that in a business sense is a cost benefit analysis, which also helps get at a clean sheet of paper for allocating funds to what is of value and important, rather than from a cutting standpoint. When you look at taxpayers, and I said on purpose that all of us in this room are taxpayers, every individual who pays rent or pays a mortgage or owns a business or whatever, every one of them are taxpayers. Because in rent, taxes is a part of what the owner passes on to the renter. And while it is important to recognize the fact that about 73% of the taxpayers in this community don't have kids in school, it doesn't mean that those folks are any less interested as stakeholders in the process. If there's a business owner who doesn't have kids in school, they have to hire the graduates or those who stay in the community. So everyone is a stakeholder in this whole process too, and I think it's important that all stakeholders are a part of this visioning process and are part of the process of input and feedback and evaluation and helping with determining, you know, where we're going with these kinds of processes. So that also then creates more transparency. People, I think, can understand better just what is going on, how money is being invested, who's involved in that investment, and what kinds of expectations do we have from those kinds of things. And I certainly agree with Peter in that regard, that the more transparency and more simplicity and the better understanding is created with where the budget is going, the better opportunity we have of not only maintaining the high level of generosity that's been demonstrated in this community for supporting public education, it also will enhance it. And people can then better, I think, see what results from that, and are those results satisfactory. Just a couple of comments about the budget in general. Almost 89% of the budget is salary and benefits of staff. So that leaves 11 to 12% of the total budget for programs and services, which means delivery of the instruction, instructional resources, materials, supply, maintenance, you know, all those kinds of things. That's a pretty finite piece of the pie that creates a lot of the angst, if you will, on the part of the board and the administration and the public to say, okay, where does that go? And what impact does it have on the kid and the teacher in the classroom to get the results that we want. So that's a pretty huge challenge related to a rather finite part of the budget. But that also, I think, has implications for how the salaries and the benefits and so forth are also managed. The QEO certainly has a significant impact. How that's managed has options and choices for the board. I think how health insurance is determined, how that package is arranged, managed, and so forth, can have a significant impact on how those dollars are invested and what will allow other dollars to be directed more directly. Excuse the redundancy of the language there. More directed to instruction and curriculum and where it has direct impact on the kids as a result. So, I guess I'll just stop there.
Let me see if I can put some hearing together. Is correct? I'm trying to hear correctly. What I'm hearing is that you have a lot of similarities in this view. And I think if you bring, for example, from a universal perspective, we're talking in terms of the budget and how our budget is now being affected by the state's laws that are being passed. You're one of those. Then I started hearing strategies how to develop trust in public. Peter mentioned women for me, and get parents, teachers, professionals getting involved. It sounds like that's how can we unite to develop that trust. That's the strategies. Then the other part that I'm hearing is the variables, the variable politics in the state, the variable in terms of population growth, the variables in terms of growth, all these variables that take place when we talk about economics. What I'm also hearing is that, and it sounds very similar, in that you 85% mentioned to the budget is similar to what Carol was saying in terms of the filters that was put upon us. Carol mentioned we have to worry about this salary thing. We need to check, but we do. So there's some similarities into that. May not be interpreted the same way, which causes the problem of semantics, but it does seem to be same thing. I wonder, with that said, I wonder if we can open the floor for the audience and see if we can take off on this discussion. Introduce yourself, I see.
Larry Winkler. I guess I do have a question. How should each of you, if there needs to be changes in how the budget process or how the budget is to be developed, what changes are you recommending to how the budget is developed so that that trust that Don was mentioning is engendered and how to make it more transparent?
I'll start on the kind of a general level. And I guess it's important to bring up the distinction between a budget and a forecast. And when I'm talking about 5 years, it's a forecast. You know, a budget is this document which says this is what we're going to be spending this coming year, and departments are somewhat constrained by that budget. Whereas with a forecast, it's an estimate. It's kind of a sense of where we're going. And so at a general level, to respond to your question, the thing that I would like to see is a five-year forecast as being almost like a typical part of the picture, so that people have a sense of where we're going and how we're going to get there. Given that 30 million or whatever is a pretty obvious target to try to reach. Now, I know that trying to do that, a huge concern is losing staff. The people people are going to see these staff cuts are going to come, and it's going to hit me, and off I go. And one of the reasons in my mind for planning it out is so that I would imagine, I don't know, but I would imagine most of that cost would be taken care of through attrition. And that if you know where you need your staff to be in the future, you could begin to train them and prepare them, those that need to be switched from one area to another, if that should take place, if that should be necessary. So that would be, you know, that's looking at that long range picture, that would be the main change recommendation that I would have as far as the budget process, as far as the mechanics of how it operates now. You know, as I said, I came in last summer, so I'm going to be an observer this year and see how it works. And if it's anything like it was for us, it's very, very painful. It's incredibly painful to watch for several months because people's lives are so affected. Our kids are, teachers are, staff are. And that is, in fact, one of the reasons for what I'm proposing, is because I think we might be able to actually address much of that.
It sounds like we're in a fine line, in agreement here. We need to be sensitive so we can protect our youngsters in school, we can protect adults to depend on their salaries. So it's something not to be taken for granted, it's something that we need to be very sensitive to that. And did you get your...
I guess I have a follow-up question if no one else wants to jump in.
Yeah, I would like to.
You want to jump in?
If you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I would make a slight differentiation between what Peter is talking about as far as forecasting and what I would refer to as long-range planning. Because I think you need both. And in the long-range planning kind of thing, if you can base that on better knowledge of what programs and services are taking place and who's involved with that and what results are you getting from that investment, then you can evaluate how all of that fits in the value system of priorities for a long-range plan. So if we can do this and get these kinds of results, but if we don't get those kinds of results, then how do we change that program? Or how do we move in a different direction or reallocate our funds? Not cut. Maybe that's semantics, but I think it's a much more constructive approach to take of an allocation and a reallocation based on good data to make those kinds of decisions. So I see that as really more of a systemic, different approach. As I understand it, I think there's some over 6,000 account numbers by which this district accounts for expenditures. In the $100 budget exercise, they boiled that down to 47 line items, which is just, you know, abominable in trying to understand. And I think I'm pretty knowledgeable of the budget. And, you know, what's included in those line items was very, very difficult to understand. You know, even asking questions, well, how does this relate to this line item and how does this relate to that program or to that service? I think, you know, one of the things that exercise really reinforced is, yeah, how tough it is to understand it. Accomplished, mission accomplished. But I don't know, you know, what else with that approach to line items and how those line items can be shifted and how they can be accounted for in different kinds of ways and so forth. It makes it very, very difficult to be transparent with it and to have some meaningful information on how to evaluate and determine priorities for programs and evaluate and determine how, what kinds of outcomes are we getting from that kind of investment? And that's a very, I think, a very significant shift in how to look at and develop a budget. And that kind of thing can be an ongoing thing during the whole year. And we don't have to end up in April and May trying to deal with the $320-some million budget all at once.
Well, I think Peter's right that we're really not talking about budgeting, because I think that the kind of, exactly the kind of thing that Don is talking about is not going to be very productive of looking at individual line items and stuff. I think it is an issue of the community coming together around the broader areas of what do we value, what do we want out of our schools. I think that's a very important piece. I think that you do that kind of thing, and then you ask the budget people to put together a budget that reflects those kind of values. I don't think any of us here have the expertise to become the budgeters or the accountants for the district. I did take a graduate course in budgeting, governmental budgeting, but which allows me to understand it from a broad base, but I'm not a budget. So I do think there's some real value, and I think that Peter's right, that it's a question of building understanding and confidence in the community. That said, there are a couple of questions I have, which is to take the Memorial West Task Force as an example, which is someplace, I mean, that's a group of people who came together, who took on a difficult subject, and became educated around a number of pieces of information, really began to understand the demographics, the geography, and the space needs of the district, for one half of the district, and worked themselves around the problem to come to a proposal. The problem we're facing is that there are some board members who didn't come along on that journey. There's a lot of the community who, even though I know individual task force members spent a lot of time educating their school community, there's still a lot of people who didn't come along and don't understand how you got to the result that the task force did. And I guess I have that same kind of concern of how do you get the community involved at that point to really to commit to making that journey and then staying the course, because as you started out saying, dealing with a lot of these things doesn't come easily to people. My experience as a essentially liberal arts person, that when you start talking about the numbers, you get about a third number of people's bodies over, and they no longer absorb what you're talking about. So,
I don't understand.
And I think as somebody who really deals with numbers very easily, but I mean, fairly simplistic one. I will say, you know, I was going to say that if you look at what the district has done across the 12 to 13 years now, we've been under revenue caps, they've done very much what Don has said, internal, re-examining everything we do, becoming more efficient. The first practically 10 years of budget cuts came out of downtown, came as a result of reorganization, becoming more efficient, dispensing with things that did not give us a bang for the buck, to not move us along on our goals of academic achievement, which we do monitor very closely. And so we were able to make those cuts and still see an increase in performance as the children we served became more diverse, greater level of poverty, and yet we are seeing that both our averages and our highs have improved, and we are pulling up the bottom substantially. The problem, I guess, is intellectually and emotionally. The thing that I keep saying, the feeling when Peter talks about what we ought to do is, I don't want to have $30 million, and I'm going to have to sit for it because it's beyond pain. And so it's sort of that part of me says, I don't really want to go through that exercise because I think you need another kind of an answer.
Any other quick questions? We have about 10 more minutes.
I'm Jeff Nervous. One of the things that struck me as I was in this involved talk, and this sort of combines some of the things that Don was saying, what Peter was saying, was kind of the idea that we need to rethink and reapproach how we deliver education. And Kelly's sort of saying that the administration's been doing that. But, I mean, if we're going to do something where we face the fact that we've got $30 million less than what we currently have now, I mean, I think we sort of have to go to that blank slate and say, what are the different, are there different ways in which we can deliver education? Can we think about redesigning or redesigning the classroom? As I sit here, I don't have any answers for what the solution is, but I think that's sort of very basic start from scratch. We have an end goal, which is we want our children to be educated and we want them to have certain skills. But we've had this idea that there's one approach to get to that end goal. And I think we have to start being creative, trying to think of different ways to do that. And in that line, I guess Don was talking about being able to assess performance. Maybe think about the importance of sort of knowing what your end goal is so that you can have the right data to analyze your assess your performance. I mean, one of the things that I deal with helping people make sense of their research is that before you start a key research project, you got to know what questions you want to ask so that you can collect the data to answer that. Sometimes I have the feeling that the information that the district collects could be more detailed. When we report WKCD scores, for instance, that's really not that useful piece of information to know that a certain percentage of students are proficient or advanced, because that doesn't really tell you where the students are. We have the whole problem about states changing their standards, but that's a different issue. So we need to think about what we want to have for our assessment, build that in so we collect that data so we can do the ongoing assessment.
Excuse me. So what question do you think?
Well, that's a very good question.
Good statement.
Yeah. I guess I don't have a question. I want to think what I want to say is that I think the approach of starting from scratch and sort of pulling everyone in for consensus. And I realize, you do have this problem.
top, that's an enormous number, is that we present them exactly what goes on. We need to educate our community, we need to educate our students, because sometimes what happens, in my mind, is that we start with a topic and it's no longer the budget, it's no longer has to set up a planning process. It becomes more of a issues that we see in education. You've been a consultant, Peter. I mean, is that happens in other areas?
Well, certainly. And you know, as I've been listening to the discussion, you know, over the last 20 minutes or so, I mean, one of the things that's going on inside is, oh God, I'm getting careful here. Because, you know, I think in a way, what you're describing is that, you know, that it's that thing about putting a mirror on to the district and it's like, okay, how are we really doing all across the board? And to do something like that is a very worthy goal. And I think there may be some careful though as to where are the resources to do it. You know, and particularly to the extent that we have to go to district staff to do it. I mean, you know, every single year when they look at budget cuts, and where are the first place to get point? It's always to this building, you know, and I really hope that in the months ahead, this is sort of on the side, but in the months ahead, during the next budget exercise, I hope people will try to avoid doing that, because I think it's only about $6 million. And there are sure there's some cuts that might be possible, but we're not going to find anything here, nothing close to it. The other thing I hope people do is that they think about maybe if they're disagreeing with the cut, that they come up with some replacement, because that's a heck of a challenge. And then finally, however difficult and however painful this exercise is in the next few months, consider this: next year it will be worse. And the year after that, it will be worse still. So the budget does get tied to everything, because we're talking about how we're spending our money on the entire program. And it kind of gets back to what Bill was saying at the outset. It's kind of like trying to find that biggest, you know, bang for the buck, if you will, or the discussion. And you have to, and the thing is, you know, this is where schools are so different to businesses and why you can't run them on your businesses, because, you know, when it's passed the other day that the business, you know, if a shipment of goods comes in and there's problems with some of the things, it's like, well, it goes back. It doesn't get like that in the school district. You accept every single person and you deal with all the different challenges that each and every one of those 25,000 children bring. And it's not easy. And I think, from my own observation and what I've seen so far here, I think they're doing an incredible job. I really do. I think they do an outstanding job. And why I'm suggesting what I'm suggesting is because I want to stay that way. And I know in the years ahead, it will be extremely difficult, because now we're talking about cuts that will be really impacting things. Carol was talking about those first 10 years, it was all about the second administration. The last 2 years has been teachers. And it's going to be more of that in the years ahead. That's why it's going to be so much more difficult. That's why I think we may want to step back and look at this thing from a more global and a longer term perspective, even though I'm with you, Carol. I don't want to cut over the freedom of money either. It's just, it's going to happen.
There's a question.
Sherry, this is a very sincere question. It sort of seems like it's common sense to be looking ahead and forecasting and looking at processes, given our changing demographics, changing funding, that seems like very common sense. Is it being done? We don't see it. Why isn't it? You know,
well, to go back, I think, I forget, I think it was Peter who said that the revenue gap as an approach to something made sense for perhaps 5 or 10 years. Now, actually, when they were first implemented or proposed, that it was a 5-year sunset. And with the intent to sort of stop things for a while and say, we need to reduce the impact on the property tax. efficient in our operation. And I think that was all to the good. And some of the things, I mean, a lot of things, to become efficient, you can't do that overnight. You have to do a lot of things. Like one very small example, we rejected the place in the late 90s. We began a process of revamping our facilities to be far more energy efficient so that the data is now about 2 years old, but between 1997, when we really started, to 2004, we increased our space by 2 full schools, several additions, major additions, and we are using less gas than we were. And we made similar kinds of changes in electrical usage, etc. But those are things that you do for a long time. It takes a long time for it to show up in terms of the budgetary impact, but you have to do it. We reorganized. We continue to do that. Sometimes the reorganization isn't always a... I'm sure I was talking when we were coming in about the district's new software, which has put all of our business kind of stuff onto the same, not just the kind of software where they can talk to each other, the systems talk to each other, which wasn't true prior to this. It's an investment, and we managed to do that with zero budget impact. But again, it takes a while before that is going to show the benefit in terms of reducing. We're funding it through the elimination of 5 positions, but the expectation is over time it will eliminate 5 more positions. So there are a lot of things along that line. We have looked very intensively at a number of things that we've done. One of the things that was very difficult for board members to give up were the homeschool coordinators. We had a lot of positions that the administration kept saying, looking at the data, it doesn't seem to have an impact on kids' performance. And ultimately, we gave, you know, that's something that we did give up. Both of, I think there are a few schools that still funded out of some discretionary money that they have. So yes, the district does, and the board is involved in a lot of this. Most of it is small at this point.
Meaning, I'm thinking more of what Peter was saying was a forecast of Craig, given our projections, given the structure, 5 years, 3 years from now, we're going to have this kind of budget, what's it going to look like? If just from my
world of
background, it's a thing that...
I think the administration has done some of that. Certainly it was easier to do that earlier than it is now. The problem of the board has done it the other way. It says, these are the things we value, don't cut those. And we particularly protected small class size. We have the 3 goals that the board has. Reading by third grade, attendance at 94%, and achievement of completion of algebra and geometry by 10th grade. And so we've said to the administration, protect the resources that support those goals. Beyond that, it's a very difficult discussion to have in public because not only when Peter talked about a little bit about people suddenly saying, well, my job's going to disappear, and maybe I should start looking for somebody someplace else to be, but also, and almost as importantly, is families begin to make choices of not staying in this community.
Just again from my experience and just reading industry stuff, it's the most effective kind of creative thinking long term is, or in my experience, has been groups of three and five put away for 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, depending on how big of a system you're, you know, throwing up in the air and rejumbling, and coming back.
Sounds to me that the question is to ask you that in a way. Now, your question is also a little bit difficult. In a sense, that it's difficult is because we're talking about a budget and what Peter was suggesting years back, the Madison School District had what we call strategic planning. And out of that strategic planning, they had a budget committee. I was part of that budget committee. And during that time, I spent hours and hours talking about how, what is it where we are and how we're going to get in the next 5 to 10 years. And then we made a recommendation to the board. And they did a paper on it in terms of the plans. So that's a variable there. A variable that the district had some years ago. And that variable gives the input. Yeah, but the district is doing something. What I'm also hearing here said is that part of the problem is that also done, we depend on accountants to guide us. Because a lot of the information comes to the district accountants, and then process to administrators, and then it's processed to school board and to the public where we make decisions. So I think your question to be very specific to conclude what you'd like to, but step one, step two, for the districts, it sounds to me to go again, I would take some other 5 hours to go there. And I think that you are asking a question that is the sentiment that is being put on the table today, that everybody wants to know from the start to the beginning and how do we get there. Citizens will have to know.
I just to quickly clarify, earlier I was asking was, so I think some of the most effective things that are done not in front of everybody going through it, it's done as part of, not that the decision's made, but the idea is.
Yeah, and the administration does, the administration does that, sort of, they have the, but because we are above the board, is publicly elected, and body, we cannot go off. There's, anytime you have more than 2 board members present, it's a public meeting, and it has to be available for everyone to see.
Peter, you can have consulted.
I'm only
shooting at us. Peter seemed to be closer to you today and answer her question. But you know, the district goes into the industry, and I'm sure that question will come up. And things complex, but we can only answer the question. Come to the court.
Well, the thought of it, I like the idea of a few people. I think there is this dilemma that Carol brings up as far as, and this is where it is different in public versus private. I mean, I have to tell you, one of the things that always strikes me is just, you know, that if private firms were under the kind of spotlight that this district is, you know, I wonder how people would cope with that. And it's just one more reason I have so much respect and admiration for the board and the administration in this district, because it's an incredibly difficult thing to do. And it is, and private companies do not get it. I mean, they're just nothing like it. And because of that, it is a different kind of creature in terms of trying to do what you're talking about. And then I think that was when I was coming up with this thought about an open task force that not too big. I think I may not like this, but I don't think this is going to be. I don't think it's something you can do in a few weeks. In a matter of who was brought together, I just think it is so complicated. And part of what will be involved, a lot of it, is working with the data that accountants have put together and really. From my experience, I'm not an accountant, but half of my work is cleaning up the accounting. And by cleaning it up, I mean restating it in a form that means something. So, for example, what really means something to me is if we lose loses a student, if somebody loses, you know, the East of history, what is the financial impact? And people say, well, it's 10,000 or 12,000, whatever the revenue is, and no, it's not. It's not the revenue that matters, it's the net revenue, that there is a cost associated with those kids. And what is that net? And to come up with that figure is extremely difficult. And I don't think anyone has done that yet. And because it is so difficult. And it would be very valuable pieces of information to have. It would be very important to things like, you know, the attendance task force, but they would come in and in other places as well. So,
that's something I did want to respond a little bit to something that Jeff said about trying to think about education differently. One of the areas I do a lot of reading in is educational research and what's happening. And I also have taken some graduate level courses, one on comparative education. What's startling is how consistently structured education is across an incredible number of different societies. And there's it'll vary between the number of students and the number of teachers, but the structure is almost the same everywhere we go. I'm not even sure that the structure makes the most sense in terms of what we know about the way in which children learn, but it certainly is a consistent structure everywhere. One of the questions I have is there a better way of delivering what we need to do? Not only so much, I mean, you can talk about it in terms of an individual kid, but how do you structure an institution so that it's more effective and less costly?
Thank you, Bill, for letting me talk about one of my official topics. And people who are interested in you watching this through the internet, I think please let us know via email. Thank you for coming tonight. We've been all the members, but I think it was worth it. Thank you.